is Lock Rentals. Mr. Potters.
Morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. Bobby Potters for the appellant. The trial court decision either failed to make correct findings of facts or made erroneous findings of fact. Consequently, the trial court incorrectly applied the standard for summary judgment. Like Reynolds stated, alleged, and the trial court incorrectly found that Fang was terminated because she used abusive language to two co-workers, Christine Christian and Pamela Badger, and was insubordinate to the partner, Michael Bergen. The trial court should have found that Fang produced sufficient evidence to show that her race played a motivating role in or contributed to Locke Reynolds' decision to terminate her employment. For this appeal, the issues centers on whether Fang met the legitimate expectations of her employer and whether similarly situated employees were not treated the same as Fang. Locke Reynolds had a progressive disciplinary policy that consisted of seven steps, beginning with a discussion with the employee of the problem and informing the employee of expectations, as well as providing a time frame in which to correct the problem. At the third step, if the employee's conduct has not improved, the director of human resources, pursuant to the progressive disciplinary policy, must provide a 30-day written notice to the employee stating that if the problem is not corrected, the employee will be terminated. The progressive disciplinary policy provides discretion at steps 4 through 7. Like Reynolds' progressive disciplinary policy was never applied to Fang. The trial court was incorrect in finding that Donald West, a legal assistant, was not a similarly situated employee to Fang. Paralegals and legal assistants were non-exempt employees. The director of human resources was responsible for work assignments, transfers, and disciplinary problems that affected both paralegals and legal assistants. Paralegals and legal assistants were eligible for personal leave time. Paralegals and legal assistants were entitled to be paid all accrued and unused personal leave time if involuntarily terminated from employment after completion of 1 year of employment. And both Fang and West worked in the asbestos group that was supervised by Michael Bergen. West cursed loudly in the workplace, screamed at co-workers, was insubordinate in the workplace, threatened to strike another co-worker, and was extremely rude and belligerent to Fang. Fang and other employees complained to Bergen and the director of human resources about West's conduct. West was neither disciplined nor terminated from her employment with Locke Reynolds. West was white. There was no meaningful differentiating or mitigating circumstances between Fang and West that distinguished their conduct or the employer's treatment of them. Melissa Hopper, a paralegal in the asbestos section, was hired just 3 months before Fang was hired by Locke Reynolds. In Hopper's 2002 annual performance evaluation, it was stated that, quote, Melissa seems irritated by clarifying questions, unquote. In her November 2003 annual performance evaluation, it was stated that Hopper had, quote, conflicts with past staff, unquote. Hopper was neither disciplined nor terminated by Locke Reynolds. Hopper is white. Christine Christian and Pamela Badger were hired after Fang. Bergen authorized Fang to train Christian and Badger on how to perform asbestos discovery responses. Fang gave Badger and Christian 4 cases apiece of the 20 asbestos litigation cases, and she kept 12. After a month without any word from either Christian or Badger, Fang sent Christian and Badger an email message inquiring about the status of the discovery responses they were drafting. Christian responded by email saying, quote, I have one draft done that Wade approved. He told me to work on the others when I could fit them into my schedule. I have been working on a national starch production project that had to come first, unquote. Fang replied by email to both Christian and Badger saying, quote, national starch may come first, but it takes no one a whole month to draft 4 discovery responses. When will you have the remaining 3 complete? Thanks, unquote. Christian then sent an email to Fang stating that she would not be doing any more of the asbestos discovery. Immediately after the exchange of emails, Bergen came to Fang's office. Fang offered Bergen a seat and politely asked Bergen if he would close the door. Bergen told Fang that she needed to hold up on how she was speaking to people about the work. Fang asked what she said was wrong, and Bergen told her that the second email she sent to Christian and Badger was inappropriate and that the recipients were getting upset. Fang told Bergen that she believed her communication was direct but not rude. On August 19, 2003, Lightruns terminated Fang's employment for insubordination toward Bergen and her conduct toward her co-workers. What the trial court should have found was that Bergen's actions toward Fang, Christian, and Badger were one-sided. That Bergen gave Fang the authority to train Christian and Badger relative to the Abesto discovery. That Fang, as part of the training process, delivered four Bestos discovery cases to Christian and Badger with instructions. That Bergen did not provide any guidelines or structure for Fang to follow relative to the training procedure. That in the absence of any guidelines or structure by Bergen, Fang acted based on what she considered to be reasonable by contacting Christian and Badger after not hearing from them either for a month. That in order for training to take place, there must be communication between the trainer and the trainee. And therefore, Christian and Badger should have brought the discovery files back to Fang. That Christian and Badger usurped Fang's authority by bypassing and ignoring Fang, who had been given the authority to train them on Abesto's discovery. That Christian and Badger were extremely disrespectful to Fang, and that Bergen impliedly accepted Christian and Badger's conduct toward Fang as appropriate. Whether or not Fang's comments in her second email to Christian and Badger was abusive was an issue for the jury and not a legal determination. Bergen rushed to Fang's office immediately after the exchange of emails about what was essentially a personnel matter. Personnel matters should be handled with some measure of privacy and should not be publicized. Therefore, it was both proper and reasonable for Fang to politely request that Bergen close the door.
Counsel, your argument up to this point has basically been that it was an overreaction to fire your client based on what she had done in this exchange of emails. But I'm not hearing
if you allow me to complete my argument, perhaps you will.
Maybe you could get to that right now.
I am, please.
Okay.
Whether or not Fang's request to Bergen to close the door was an act of insubordination was an issue for the jury and not a legal determination. It was also equally proper and reasonable for Fang to politely offer Bergen a seat. Whether or not Bergen's offer to whether or not Fang's offer to Bergen to sit down in her office was an act of insubordination was also an issue for the jury. Pretext may be shown by such weaknesses, implausibilities, inconsistencies, incoherencies, or contradictions in defendant's proffered reasons for his actions that a reasonable person could rationally find them unworthy of credence and hence infer the defendant did not act for the asserted non-discriminatory reasons. Fang produced sufficient evidence that Lightruns' reasons for her termination were a pretext by showing that, number one, Lightruns' explanation of her termination had no basis in fact, or two, the explanation was not the real reason, or three, the reason stated was insufficient to warrant discharge. The trial court should have found but did not that two other employees, West, a legal assistant, and Hopper, a paralegal, both white, engaged in disruptive or insubordinate conduct in the workplace that affected other employees and that neither of those employees were either disciplined or terminated from employment. The trial court should have also found but did not that Christian and Badger, both paralegals, who had less seniority than Fang, and both white, engaged in abusive behavior by disrespecting and ignoring Fang, who was supposed to have been training them on Abesto's discovery.
Mr. Potters, as to the similarly situated situation, as far as contact with clients, is there a difference between the legal secretary position and paralegals, or does the record not reflect that?
The record does not reflect that.
So we don't know whether Ms. Fain had a greater contact with the public.
No, we do not. Like Rose did not follow this progressive disciplinary procedure, Roger Fang, nor was Fang ever on sufficient notice of the need to conform her behavior to a specific and clear standard of conduct sufficient to avoid discipline, including termination from employment. Consequently, the trial court should have found that Fang established a prima facie case of discrimination that was not sufficiently rebutted by Like Reynolds' reasons. The workload in the Abesto section was evenly distributed. Like Reynolds was on notice in August 2002 and January 2003, and in August 2003 of Fain's concern about low pay and that the bulk of the work in the investigative section was being performed by her. Fain's workload increased significantly with the departure of another paralegal, Linda Sears.
Do you want to save some time for rebuttal, Mr. Potter?
No.
Okay.
Can I complete?
You can conclude. Well, your time has expired, but you can conclude your thought.
All right, thanks. At the time Fain was hired by Light Runners in 2003, she was paid a starting salary at the lowest end of the salary scale for paralegals in the Indianapolis job market. Co-workers all white hired just before or after Fain were all paid at the medium salary range for paralegals in the Indianapolis job market. During the course of Fain's employment with Light Runners, all of her co-workers received substantially higher pay increases. At the time of Fain's initial employment with Light Runners, Fain had comparable experience to other paralegals hired by Light Runners. In closing, how plausible is it to conclude that in 1999, 2000, 2001, 2002, and 2003 that the only paralegal or legal assistant who warranted discipline or termination was Fain? This case should be reversed and remanded for trial.
Thank you, Ms. Potters.
Thank you.
Ms. Crow?
May it please the Court. I think it's important to look at this case through the proper prism, and this is a straightforward discrimination analysis here. Mr. Potter spent some time discussing the employee handbook and what it does or does not say about progressive discipline, and I would like to remind the Court that, as that handbook states, it is not a contract with the employee. The employer is not required to follow by the letter those policies. There's no guarantee that that will happen, and there is language in that employee handbook that clearly points out that there may be circumstances in which immediate termination or failure to follow those steps exactly might be warranted, and I suggest that this is certainly one of those. In addition, Mr. Potter spent a considerable amount of time discussing really his client's disagreement with the decision to terminate her, that her conduct was not as bad as anybody else's and therefore doesn't justify termination, as if perhaps she was some kind of an employee that was a member of a union and could not be fired unless there was just cause to fire her. That is not the standard here. As I said, this is a straightforward discrimination analysis. And the areas of dispute are the areas that are commonly in dispute in these types of cases. As far as the prima facie level, it is whether or not Ms. Fain was meeting the legitimate performance expectations of the employer and whether or not she has pointed to any similarly situated employee not in the protected class who was treated more favorably than her. And then, of course, the dispute also involves the ultimate question of whether the employer's explanation was a pretext for discrimination. And I will address each of those briefly. As far as Ms. Fain meeting Lock Reynolds' legitimate expectations, the record shows that she was the lowest performing paralegal in the asbestos group, which was headed up by senior partner Michael Bergen, and that was consistently true throughout the term of her employment. In her case, a client had complained about her communication skills, that they were inappropriate and somewhat offensive, and that happened with a paralegal of an important client and also with a national coordinating council. And in the asbestos area, of course, it does involve multi-district litigation where outside contact with other paralegals and coordinating council are an important aspect of that paralegal job. She caused tension between her coworkers. That was brought out in her evaluations, and her conduct was offensive to Michael Bergen. As far as similarly situated non-African American employees, she has pointed to two. One was Donna West, who, as we have said, was a legal secretary, and there is some evidence in the record to be sure that she engaged in some behavior that was somewhat odd. However, as you will see in the affidavit of Vicki Accardi, the human resources director, who oversees disciplinary matters with respect to support staff, secretarial staff, there was some evidence that Ms. West had some kind of a disability which might have required an accommodation with respect to her interpersonal skills, and that may have entered into that equation. So that makes it a different situation, aside from the fact that they had different job duties, and there was no evidence that Michael Bergen was the supervisor of Ms. West. The second person who she points to as being similarly situated and treated more favorably was another paralegal in the asbestos area, and that was Melissa Hopper. And as Mr. Potter stated, there were a couple of generalized comments in Melissa Hopper's evaluation that she seemed irritated by clarifying questions or had conflicts with past staff. I don't think that at all rises to a similar type of behavioral problem that was exhibited by Ms. Fain. In Ms. Hopper's case, there was no complaint by a client of abrasive or inappropriate communication style. The reference to conflicts with past staff appears to refer to a past conflict, not a present one, as was exhibited with Ms. Fain. There is no evidence that Ms. Hopper refused to acknowledge any problems with her interaction with other people, as did Ms. Fain. There is no evidence that there was any perceived insubordination or improper dealings with senior partner Michael Bergen. There is no evidence that she was disruptive and causing tension between the other paralegals in the department. And there was, of course, no need to assign an attorney to oversee her work, as was the case with Ms. Fain. So I don't think they are at all comparable. As far as the pretext issue, which is of course is the ultimate question here, there is no question, I think, that Mr. Bergen honestly believed that Ms. Fain's communication style was disruptive and that it was appropriate for him and Susan Klein, the paralegal liaison, to conclude that she did not acknowledge the problem or demonstrate any kind of a willingness to change it. There is no evidence at all that the decision had anything to do with Ms. Fain's race. It's all about her hostile, confrontational style of communication and had absolutely nothing to do with her race. There is absolutely no evidence of that. And I think that it's very clear when you look at the affidavit of Michael Bergen and his contemporaneous memo that he put together the day of this this incident, that he honestly believed that her communication style was causing tension, was disruptive, was hostile, confrontational, and that they couldn't continue dealing with an individual who was creating that kind of tension within the department. I will just briefly mention the question of unequal pay and unequal workload. Those are issues that Mr. Potters did address. Those were not in the EEOC charge, so I think that Ms. Fain failed to exhaust her administrative remedies with respect to that. The Novitsky case in this district is instructive on that. It involved a claim of age and religious discrimination, and the court determined that a claim of failure to accommodate religious beliefs by not letting or by requiring her to work on religious holidays was not encompassed within that claim that she was fired because of age and religion. And I think that we have the same thing here.
The plaintiff did make a 1981 claim here, though.
Yes, that's true.
And so the pay and workload issues are cognizable under that claim without regard to the exhaustion issue?
Well, that's probably true, and I also want to point out that those claims are not supported by the facts in any event. The pay, the initial pay that Ms. Fain received was negotiated by a third party, and she testified in her deposition that she was satisfied with the pay she received. It was, in fact, more than a 30% increase over the pay that she was receiving at her previous employer when she began with Locke Reynolds. She was given a raise in January of 2002, when she had only been there approximately 6 months, and she was not even eligible for a raise. And then in January of 2003, she received a raise that she was not happy with, and she expressed her dissatisfaction with that. And at that point, her raise was increased to 5%, despite the fact that her performance evaluations, her scores were much lower than her counterparts, the other two paralegals in that area. As it turned out, in January of 2003, her raise was 5%, and the raises of the other two paralegals were 5% and 6%, respectively. So they're all within a percentage point.
There was a discrepancy in the briefing about whether the plaintiff had a four-year bachelor's degree at the time she was hired. The plaintiff suggested that she did, and your brief said she did not.
We believe the evidence is that she did not, that she had a paralegal certificate and was working toward a degree, but we believe the evidence is that she did not. As far as her claim of unequal workload, she gives her subjective opinion that she worked harder than the other paralegals. And I think the record bears out that if you look at the overtime hours that she worked and that her peers worked, she worked less overtime than any of them did. And she also testified in her deposition that she got help when she needed it. And I think the other important thing to point out here is that she made some general complaints that, hey, I didn't get as big of a raise as I would have liked, or I worked harder than other paralegals in my area, but she never, during the course of her employment, made any kind of a complaint that this was, that she felt this was on the basis of her race. In fact, she never made any complaint while she was employed with Locke Reynolds that any conduct toward her, she felt it was based upon her race. In conclusion, I would just like to point out that under the proper standard for Title VII and Section 1981, I don't think that there is any question of material fact if you look at the analysis, and that the summary judgment in favor of Locke Reynolds should be affirmed.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Groh. Thank you, Mr. Potters. The case is taken under advisement.